Welcome back. Bob Olson with us, author, Answers About the Afterlife. So you went through a regression. Do you believe in reincarnation?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. And again, before I didn't, I've had enough regressions and done enough research in this field to think of anything other than that. You know, I can't. It's like I'm on the other side of it now. It's like I would have to find evidence to make me not believe, because there's just so much evidence to believe that we do reincarnate.
Bob, what's it all about? What do you think this entire process is? The afterlife, us being here, what do you think it is?
You know, it's interesting. To me, this is the foundation of like, the best thing that I've learned in investigating life after death, which is that life is just about having experiences. So, but you got to understand the reason why it's for our soul. So if you think of our soul, and I separate the soul and the spirit as sort of one and the same, but the soul sort of stays in the spirit world, and the soul is our whole self. And it's that part of us that experiences many different lives. The spirit is the part of us that enters our body. It's a part of our soul, but it only experiences this one life. So it's Bob's spirit. And I believe that the soul, because it exists, it's an eternal being in the spiritual world where there is no fear, no crime, no hatred, nothing negative. It experiences a physical life in order to have experiences that it can't have. Mm-hmm. In the spiritual world.
Is it a lessons learned where we keep coming back as we get better and better and more evolved?
Yeah, I do believe that. I maybe tweak that a little bit to just that what we're learning with each new incarnation is to experience all sides of every possible experience. So for instance, you know, in one life, you might be murdered, and in another life, you would be the murderer. And in another life, you would be a family member who lost someone in a murder. And in another life, you would be a family member whose loved one was a murderer. You know, so you have all these different experiences, and it's one, and you know, we can have several experiences in one life, obviously, but that's sort of the point. And with each one, we learn compassion, we learn love, we learn what real joy is. You know, I mean, how many of us, you know, you bang your thumb and you've never appreciated your thumb more than
or your little toe, the baby toe.
Yeah.
You talk about pain.
Right. Like, who needs the baby toe, right? Then you bang it and you can't walk on it for a while. All of a sudden, you're like, whoa, I love that little toe.
Yeah, well, you know, you say, how can a little thing like that shut down a huge human body, you know?
Yeah, that's right. It cripples you. But, yeah, and so to me, that's what it's all about. And but it's not – so that brings in both the positive and the negative experiences. And so the thing that I've gained in all this investigation is to recognize that nobody promised us a happy, joyful life all the time. And in fact, many of the experiences that we've had, which are negative, teach us more about love and compassion than we could possibly learn. So just like that little toe or the thumb mm-hmm. example, we learn more to appreciate those parts of us because of a negative experience we had.
Prior to my birth, did I pick my parents?
Yes, most definitely. I mean, from what I understand, yeah, without question. And so there are certain things that we're able to pick. And
well, I did something right, Bob. Finally.
There you go. Yeah. Now they're smiling at you. That's right. Me too. And how blessed are we, you know, to feel that way, right? But yeah, definitely, definitely. And then there are a lot of things that we pick that are just potentials. I went through a depression in the late 80s, early 90s.
Why?
I went
through what happened?
I went through a 5-year depression.
5 years?
Yeah, it was 5 years. I mean, it was a bad depression. There was depression and there was bipolar disorder in my family, on my father's side of the family.
All right.
Different people had one or the other.
Tough.
And then I was finally diagnosed because I was having, you know, feeling horrible. And I went to see somebody and said, they said, oh, your textbook, this is depression, no problem. But I kept trying different medications, couldn't get me out of it. And for 5 years, I tried one medication after the next. And then eventually found one that worked. And I still take it. It's been 20 years, actually, this September.
And it works for you, obviously.
Yeah, it works for me. I've been symptom-free for 20 years. I'll take that for the rest of my life if I can, right? But I was suicidal. I was feeling suicidal. I had all this, what they call suicidal ideation. I was focused on taking my life to get away from the pain.
And then the next day you were okay, or was it constant?
Well, it was on and off, right? Yeah, it wasn't every single day.
No.
You know, there was many days, and then I might not think about suicide for 3 months, you know, and then it would come back again, become very focused. It was very cyclical. And but the point that I'm making is I came into this life with the potential of taking my own life. So I had that potential. There are people who would never even consider it, never even enter their mind. And I learned that one day, long after my depression, I was talking to my wife, Melissa, and I was saying to her, well, you know, everybody thinks about suicide. And she's like, no, not everybody thinks about suicide. That's not true.
No.
I'm like, what?
No.
And so there are, you know, so for me, I had the potential of taking my life. It was a potential that I came into this life with. You know, I knew what I was going to look like. I knew who my parents were going to be. I knew where I was going to be born. There's a lot of things that we know when we're born, we know what it's going to be like. But then you have all these potentials, and it's our free will, because our free will trumps anything else. We have that human free will, so we have the power to make choices. And for me, not making that choice to take my own life, that was my free will that did that. But it could have, you know, it could have gone either way at times.
Sure could. Let's take some calls here for you. Let us go to Brandon, State College, Pennsylvania, to get things going. Hey, Brandon, good morning.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Good.
Hi, Brandon.
Hey, that was pretty cool. As soon as I called you guys and got put on the phone, you guys started talking about reincarnation, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you guys about.
Okay, sure.
So my father was really close with me when I was young. Sadly passed away when I was 8. He had leukemia, died of cancer. He was only 24 years old, really young guy. Had me when he was 16, did everything he could. Dropped out of high school, got his GED, went right to college, became a pharmaceutical chemist, mm-hmm. really smart guy. But he passed away. Well, after he died, you know, I was lost. I wasn't very close with my mom at all. And so I kind of turned to, you know, the Ouija board when I was young to try to talk to my dad. Well, you know, after one time, my sister and I, we were sitting there and, you know, this thing started moving around and it was saying it was my father. And it was hard to believe, but we were asking it questions and it was answering them. Surprisingly correct, and it freaked me out. So I would ask it questions like, who am I going to marry? Who should I marry? And it would always say the same name, Brittany Warner. Well, that was my wife's maiden name. That's who I ended up marrying. And oddly enough, I met her at the exact same place where my father had met my mother. And so that was like one thing that was like really freaky. Well, up to current now, you know, we're together and we have 2 children. My son, my firstborn, he started talking really young. When he was like 11 months old, he started talking. But when he was 2 years old, I never, ever, ever, ever once told him about my father because he didn't know him. He was too young to understand or anything like that. So I never told him. Well, one day we were putting puzzles away, and he was like, Dad, I know how your dad died. And I was like, what? What do you mean you know how my dad died? I never talked to you about my dad. He's like, oh, no, it's okay. I know how he died. And I'm like, what? I was like, how? He's like, well, he got real, real sick. So sick he couldn't eat anymore. And he was real weak and he was real skinny and he just couldn't do it anymore and he died. And I was like, you know, that is a very vague explanation of what happened. And then he said something that freaked me out. He said, Brandon, I am your father. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I'm shaking right now. It sent like a wave of, because I'm a pretty spiritual guy. I've always, you know, went with my gut. I've always listened to my gut, and it's gotten me a lot of good results. So, you know, I listen. I have like a kind of an ear for that. And I'll tell you what, that was really freaky. And I just wanted to share that story with you
guys.
It's
a great story.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
Thanks, Brandon.
Thank you, Brandon.
There's many, many stories like that, Bob.
Yeah, there really are. There's so many. And, you know, with the little kids talking, I mean, that's what I always said. I was talking earlier about the kids. They're so fascinating. You got to listen to them. And, you know, a lot of times you'll hear them talking about they have past life memories. And so they'll talk about, for instance, the first time I ever heard it was my friend's daughter. So I don't know how old she was. She was under five. And my friend was, who's a woman, she was talking about her mother. And the child said, "No, it's not your mother. She's my sister." Like she, and then she started talking about my friend's sisters and saying, "They're not your sisters." And I don't remember what it was, but it was some other relationship. And so she was having memories from a past life that, you know, because we do, we tend to share lifetimes with the same sort of group of people. And not always, not all the time, but many times there's a lot of the same people. We share many of the same lives. So that's what's going to happen. The kids are going to remember those past life, probably from the most recent past life, remember the relationships that you had. And we're going to be different genders and certainly different, you know, some will be friends or family members or, you know, who knows, enemies. But it's really fun when the kids recognize that. And of course, most people think the kids are just talking gibberish, but, you know, pay attention.
Yeah, you have to do that. We go to Lori now in Gilbert, Arizona. Hey, Lori, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, I just had a story I wanted to share with the listeners about a reading I had a couple years ago. It was about a deceased dog. I have had dogs all my life, but I had a greyhound that died in a horrible accident, and I felt terribly guilty, and I had grief for about a year and could not get over it for anything. I'm a pretty spiritual person, and but I tried prayer and everything and counseling. I couldn't get any peace. What happened was the dog was running in my backyard. And I shut a gate that she was used to having open to keep my friend's dog from getting hurt because he was going over and kind of fence fighting with the neighbor's dog. And so I shut that gate to keep his dog from going over there to get hurt or, you know, messing with the other neighbor's dog. And I went into the house to get the soccer ball for my dog to play with. And my dog was running really fast and slammed into the gate just at the very moment I was in the house, and my friend saw it and was crying and terrible. I just had terrible grief for about a year, feeling so guilty. You know, my dog would be alive if I, you know, had that gate open. Anyway, I finally went and got a reading from someone that I'd met in the past. And I was kind of skeptical, but I told her on the phone what had happened, and she says, "Oh, well, you know, I made an appointment with her." She says, "Well, I can tell you your dog is right with you. She's right with you. She's by your feet." And so anyway, I made an appointment to go see her, and she mentioned the dog, and she says, "You're the person that had the dog that died of cancer, right?" And I says, or that had cancer. I says, "No, she didn't have cancer." And at this point, I'm thinking, this lady isn't for real. And she kind of went on, and then her face just changed, and she says, "No, I remember you. She had a fence." And I says, "Yeah, but she didn't have cancer." And her face just totally changed, and she says, "I have to tell you, sweetie, I don't mean to hurt you, but I have to tell you the truth. She had cancer, and she had it in her kidneys, and that's the reason God took her away from you, so she was going to go downhill really, really fast." And I didn't tell this psychic that this dog was on medication for kidney problems, that she only had one kidney, and she had a cyst on the other kidney, and she was on medication for this and had medication for kidney problems, and I didn't tell the psychic that. And and she told me all kinds of things about the dog, but when she told me that she had a tumor on her kidney, I just about fell over. And it's the only thing that gave me peace over that death. And she says, "No, you shouldn't feel guilty. That was just God sparing you her pain and your pain. She was going to get really sick really fast." So and that was the only thing that gave me peace. And I just wanted to share that with, I know there's a lot of animal lovers out there. I know you're an animal lover, George.
Oh, yes.
So I just wanted to share that. And it just gave me the most awesome peace. And I was just so thankful that she told me a bunch of other things about my life that you know, she wouldn't have known before. But anyway, I just wanted to share that.
Thank you.
You know, because there's a lot. My animals are my family, and it's just a really awesome thing when you can know that they're okay and it wasn't my fault.
Good
well, that's quite mm-hmm. a story. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm a big animal lover too. My dog's my second best friend here in the world. So I understand it. And the grief that we experience with our pets, not everybody, but for many people, I mean, it's the same grief that we losing any kind of family member.
It sure is.
Isn't it? You know, it's the same thing. Not everybody understands that, of course, but it certainly is. And how nice, you know, for her to be able to get that kind of peace of mind. Interesting. I mean, we talk about, you know, people having these experiences for reasons, and you know, it's a conundrum. You know, she if she was spared having to watch the dog die from the kidney tumor, she still suffered from feeling as though she caused the dog's death by closing the gate. You know. They're both difficult things to go through, and either way, and it ended up being her experience, but there's so much in that story that she gets to learn from. Some of it is self-forgiveness, and then recognizing how hard she was on herself when maybe she didn't even need to be, that she, you know, it might have been, and this is the one thing that we got to all think about every day, because it's so important, is that it might have been that she saved this dog suffering by closing that gate. So what we thought was an accident, mm-hmm. what we thought was a bad thing, actually turned out to be a good thing, and that's just the way life is. We just never really know.
Don't you think, too, Bob, that life always has consequences?
Yeah.
Whatever action you take, good or bad, there's always a consequence.
Totally true. You see it all the time. And you know, that's just the way life works. You know, it's cause and effect entirely. And that was a wonderful story. Thanks for sharing that. I'm so sorry about your dog. And but that's a great story. It has many lessons in it.
Yeah, animals have that very special connection with us, don't they?
They really do. And they're you know, I believe they're here to teach us things. We all think we're here to take care of our pets, and I believe that they're here for us, and they're doing things, you know, and a lot of times they're mirroring us in ways. Having done a lot of work with animal communicators, I've recognized that the animals really, they're more spiritual beings. Our pets are more spiritual beings than us, and they're mirroring things to us to help us learn the lessons that we came here to learn. So they're part of the process. They're only here for, you know, whatever, a few years, really. A short period of time to help us learn the things that we want to learn during those years. And they're great mirrors.
Bob, we're going to come back and take some final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Bob Olson with us, answers about the afterlife. You're out there where President Bush had a resort, aren't you, Bob?
Yeah, right. He's 10 minutes away. Used to live even closer to him a couple of years ago, but yep, he's out here.
What was it like when he went out there? Kenny Bunkport, right?
Yep, Kenny Bunkport, yep. Yeah, I mean, you know, when they're around, they can raise a little havoc. You know, the streets are closed and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Everything, you know, the little parades that go through. I remember going into the barbershop one time, and the Secret Service are in there watching over me while he was getting his hair cut. So, you know, it's interesting.
It sure is. How long were you in Worcester? What was that time period?
I grew up there. I moved from there in the year 2000. I came up to Maine.
Oh, so you were there a long time. Do you remember, did you go to Fitchburg much?
All the time, yeah.
Okay.
I had a lot of investigations there.
All right,
this is
funny because you remember the big rock in Fitchburg?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so if you kept going up the hill, my grandfather owned a furniture store there called the Union Furniture Company.
No way.
And they had apartments that he rented out, but they lived in this huge complex of an apartment. And wonder if you ever went to school with any of them. The Baho family, B-A-H-O.
A-H-O, doesn't ring a bell.
Okay.
But I used, you know, I used to travel when I went to school. I went to St. Anselm College in Manchester, New Hampshire, and so I would for the last couple of years I was kind of commuting because I had all my classes on either 2 or 3 days, you know, and so I was driving up there up Route 13, right through Fitchburg and Leominster and that whole way. So yeah, I spent a lot of time up there.
Yeah, my relatives, got a lot of relatives still there. My mother's side is still there. My cousins are there.
You get back often?
I haven't been back in Fitchburg in years.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
Years. I used to go there every summer as a little boy until I was 17 years old. Every summer from when school got done in Detroit to when it started, I was there. I turned into a Boston Red Sox fan after Detroit, of course, which was my hometown.
That's right. Well, you're going to have to come back. If you ever do, you let me know. We'll get together.
And I think the St. Louis Blues, the hockey team, had the Worcester as its smaller league team out there, didn't they?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure. I know Tommy, my producer, could tell me that. He's a hockey
aficionado. I know. He can come up with anything. I was listening. I happened to be an insider member, and I was listening to a Judith Orloff. And
oh,
you had a question, interview that you did, and you had a question, and then not long after, you had the answer for you. So I was like, I got to get one of those people.
They're good people. So where do we get your book, Answers About the Afterlife?
Amazon's the best place, because as I'm looking at it now, I mean, it retails for $14.99. Amazon right now.
Oh, they discount it. Oh, my
God. It's selling it for $8.99.
How can you make any money doing that?
Well,
volume.
I know, you know, honestly, I don't, it's not about that for me. And I think that's for a lot of authors. So many people think that authors are making $1 million off of their books, right? And they're just not.
Very few.
But what's comical is the Kindle edition is now more expensive than the paperback. How does that happen?
Yeah,
I don't know.
That is truly amazing. It really is. Are you still a PI actively?
No, you know, it got to a point where this became my full-time gig, so I don't do it anymore. I still get requests every once in a while. I worked for lawyers all the time, and I ended up specializing in personal injury cases for years. And I felt I enjoyed those the most because I felt like I was doing some good. There'd be like a dangerous product or something like that.
Yeah.
I worked for a guy, Schwartz and Schwartz out in Boston, was a little big law firm that handled all those cases for toys.
Those class action suits.
That's right.
Right.
And I felt like I was doing some good in the world.
Super. So you were primarily with the defense attorneys or the plaintiffs?
Plaintiffs when I was doing the personal injury. And then when I was doing the criminal cases, I was with the defense attorney,
I wonder if you ever investigated somebody who was on disability and you found them running around and stuff, but then when people were watching, they were confined to a chair or something like that.
Oh, yeah. There was lots of those. And for me, I always found myself on the other side of it again because the insurance companies had their own investigators, and they're the ones that were trying to chase those people around and get pictures of them doing stuff they weren't supposed to be doing. And I worked for a lot of the personal injury law firms on the plaintiff side so to try to balance out things. But you know what? I was happy when they got caught. So,
all right, let's go back to some final calls here for you. We have Breanne in Anaheim, California, west of – oh, she's on the wild card line. Hi, Breanne.
Oh, hi, George. I'm really happy that I got to call. And George, my family loves you. And Bob, I think it's awesome. My family's from Massachusetts also, Worcester, Mass.
Right.
I was born there. My mom and dad were raised there. And I want to say that I'm calling on behalf of my two brothers. I have two brothers that committed suicide recently.
Oh, boy.
One did it in October 2011, my older brother, Patrick Mahoney, and he did it at age 56, and my brother Brian just committed suicide this February 21st, so 3 months ago, May 21st, and he had a stroke, and he was at 48. He had a serious medullary brainstem stroke, and he was paralyzed, and that little voice inside me told me to go to the nursing home where he was staying, and it was like 6 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, well, he's probably asleep, but it kept gnawing at me. When I got there, he was half on the floor and half on his bed. He was silently aspirating. And he was rushed to St. Joe's, where he had a DNR, and the older man doctor said, there's nothing we can do. He has a DNR. You might as well go get, you know, get give him last rites, which we did, Catholic and Christian last rites. And then this younger doctor came out and said, look, there's something you can do. You can override the DNR. And we said, is that legal? And he said, sure. So they popped my brother's lungs out with a lot of fluid. He was like in a coma. And so, and we overrode the DNR because we weren't ready to let him go.
Yeah.
And so, he did live, and he said he passed over and went to heaven, and he saw my father and my other brother, Stephen, who has already passed over. But what I want to know is I recently, like last week, I was at this church, and they had a book table, and there was James. I'm a big James Von Prague fan also, and his book was there right there. I thought, oh, gosh, it says Talking to Heaven, because I've had a lot of anger about both my brother Patrick and Brian doing this because it just seems so out of character for them. And, I mean, it's just, I don't know. So I picked up the book, and I looked at the chapter on suicide, and I read the chapter twice, and I sat there and cried my eyes out for a couple hours and went, wow. Because what James was saying was, you know, you have to cremate the bodies of people that commit suicide right away, which we did cremate them. And the service, we had a double service here in Anaheim on the 12th of this month at St. Justin's Church, where I went to school as a child, where they went to school. And they had a bagpiper and all this stuff, but I was so angry at them, you know, that I didn't go to the funeral. I know that's very not good to say, but I've been so distraught over them doing it that I just thought if they didn't value their life, I know I shouldn't think like that, and I thought I didn't want to honor them because I was really angry. But after reading his chapter on suicide, I've kind of let go of all the anger, and now I'm sending a lot of love. But I want to know what your take is on suicide. Like, okay, I don't know if they really made it to the other side, if they're really, you know, somewhere stuck in a limbo because, you know, we're Catholic and you're not supposed to take your own life. And I don't know, in the book, the part of what I read from James Von Prague was saying that they really still are tormented, kind of. And my mom and my sister are going to a reading real soon here with this woman named Renee Michelle, and she's out of Westminster. And I was curious what you thought about all that stuff with suicide, because I'm so conflicted with it, and I'd love to hear your views on it.
You know, I did a video on it. You can find it online. Bob Olson, just put in Bob Olson suicide, you'll find the video. But I my take on it, and of course, I had because of the story I told earlier, you know, I had a special relationship with, you know, suicide, and so I had a real interest in it. And my take on the afterlife is everybody goes to the other side. Everybody goes into the light, just like everybody else. Everybody is surrounded by the love and joy and light of the spirit world. And what happens, and this is a long explanation, so I won't give it all. I'm going to give a brief version of it here. But what happens is, we as spiritual beings, we're multidimensional. So there's going to be aspects of your brothers that will have some self reproach, some, you know, some regret, and even self-loathing about what they do. But the only one that's judging them is themselves. There's nobody. I have found no evidence of hell. I have not found evidence of hell. That's just my investigation.
I hope you never find it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I hope. And, you know, except for what people are experiencing here in the physical body, but I haven't. And so they'll have that aspect of themselves, but there's what it doesn't take away from all the other wonderful things that they did in their lives. And the wonderful choices they made and actions they took and the wonderful things that happened in their lives. So, you know, everybody's going to remember, one, that we live an entire life. You know, you said Patrick was 56 when he died. He had a whole bunch of experiences. This one act that he took to end his life does not diminish or take away from everything else that he did that was good in his life. So there's a balance that exists, and he's going to get to enjoy all those wonderful things that he did at the same time that he is going to experience what his final choice of taking his life, how that affected other people in his life. And one of the things that is, I think you'll find interesting, George, that I found really interesting is the spirit experience. The human experience does not end upon our death. So the experience that our spirits have, we enter this body, we live, you know, however long we live, and then we leave our body upon our death, our physical death. Well, that experience, the human experience for that person, say the experience of Bob When I die, the experience of Bob is going to continue on in the spirit world because my loved ones are still living on. And so if I took my life, then I would still know what was going on with my loved ones. I would see how that affected them in a negative way, but I would also see how other things that I did in my life affected them in a positive way. So it all balances out. But the only reason we do this is what I said earlier. Souls come into this life to have experiences that they can't have in the spiritual world. Suicide is one of those experiences. And so your brothers will have taken their life. Again, that was a potential that they came into this life with. And now that they're on the other side, they're learning and growing from that experience. Now, I'm not saying that they're not regretting it. I'm sure they are, but they're also growing from it. And then if you recognize that we are eternal beings, that their souls are going to go on to have other lifetimes, then you recognize we've probably all taken our lives or killed somebody or done something horrible, and yet here we are again with the opportunity to live happy, joyful lives again. You know what I mean? And so that's sort of my brief version of what happens with people who take their own lives. They go the same place the rest of us go, really.
Let's take a few more calls here and wrap things up here, Bob. Let's go to Martin in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Martin, go ahead.
Hey, thanks, George.
Sure and thing.
Nice to meet you, Bob.
Hi, Martin.
Hey, there's a couple things I want to ask you, if I may. Earlier today, for the first time, I got to see the movie Heaven for Real. I would recommend everybody
great
go
movie.
See that.
Yep.
And it's a pretty awesome movie. And it kind of brought me back some memories about 10 years ago when my auntie went to go visit her at a hospice. It was me, my brother, and my sister. And when we went to go visit her, it was at night. And right when we got there, the nurse was telling us, we couldn't visit our aunt right away because we had to put her in sedation because she kept on yelling or something about that. Somebody was visiting her and telling her, kept on, let's go, let's go, let's go. And I go, and we all just like look at each other. I said, what do you mean? She said somebody was visiting her and tell her, let's go, let's go. And I said, well, who was that person? She goes, she kept on calling her Dolores. That's my mother's name.
Huh.
She died in 1999. This was in 2002, okay? So we all looked at each other, and we were, like, surprised. And all of a sudden, the nurse came back. She goes, well, you guys can visit her for a little bit. So we went to go visit her, and she was kind of, you know, the sedation kind of got to her. We couldn't really communicate to her. But we just all prayed with her and everything, and then the next day she died.
Okay.
Bob, you did mention about that suicide. You had those contemplations?
Yeah.
Yep.
Myself, to be honest with you, I had contemplations of suicide about a couple years ago when I was living in Vegas.
Yep.
And to be honest with you, Bob and George, I challenged God. I asked God, I said, God, if you truly exist, and I had a knife in my hand, I was ready to slice my wrist.
Wow.
Okay? And I said, God, if you truly exist, I said, I want to hear your voice. I want to know, I want to hear something. Please let me know that you exist. So I stood there quiet for 10 minutes, holding the blade to my wrist. And all of a sudden, I get Deuteronomy chapter 14. And check out what it says. It says, you are the children of the Lord, your God. You shall not cut yourselves, nor make any baldness between the eyes or the dead.
See, it was perfect. Perfect.
Wow.
These messages happen, Bob, all the time.
They do. They do. And, you know, I want to talk about what happened with his aunt there in the hospitals. I'm sure you know this. Other people might not. What she was experiencing was what's called a deathbed vision, or some people call it a pre-death vision. And what happens is when people are dying and they're soon to go, our loved ones in spirit will come to greet us. And sometimes they'll just let us know that they're going to be there for us when we cross over. I mean, some people have seen them weeks ahead of time, some days ahead of time, some hours ahead of time. And in this case, it sounds like Dolores was there, rushing her along.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably fit right in with her personality to tell her, you know, come on, we're ready for you. It's time for you to go. But anyways, that's called a deathbed vision. A lot of people have those, and they're real. They're real. I mean, those people aren't just hallucinating. My investigations have led me to truly believe that people are in spirit or visiting them.
What's it all about, Bob? What have you come up with? What is the theory of what this is?
As far as the afterlife is
mm-hmm.
concerned? Well, you know, again, you know, I go back to, you know, what I said earlier about it. It's all about experiences. But I believe that, you know, I talked about free will, and we do have the free will to decide how we're going to respond to any one thing that happens to us in life. So, you know, my conclusion was all about that. It wasn't even about the after. It was like how the afterlife can change our lives and improve them. And that's what it's done for me. Learning about the afterlife, I didn't expect this, but it gave me a sense of inner peace that I never knew existed before. And it allowed me to choose joy, you know, and love over, you know, sadness and hatred. So even when bad things happened to me, I knew that I always had the choice. And we know all those people. You've interviewed a lot of those people.
Many,
you know,
many.
Horrible things have happened to them. And yet they're still happy, joyful people because they've been able to make that choice to look on the other side of their victim.
The name of the book, Answers About the Afterlife. Bob, thanks for being on the program.